Why are police photographing our license plates?
What are we doing for veterans returning home damaged physically and mentally, suffering from depression, homelessness, and suicide?
Why did the Supreme Court deposit corporate money into our electoral process?
Should we redefine middle class as working poor? Or is it just another Wall Street merger?
What's really behind new voter picture ID laws in certain states?
Why aren't NBC, ABC, CBS, and Fox asking these questions?
Welcome to the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio, where we connect the dots. The mission of the Reasonable Voice and the Reasonable Voices working together on our Blog Talk Radio shows is connecting the dots between politics and finance, a need for better education, humanity and world peace, and the arts, which we then gladly provide our listeners, the voting public, as informative food for thought to provoke their self-determination for equal opportunity. The Reasonable Voices are advocates prioritizing education, preserving our history, leading by example for a peaceful and prosperous world, embracing creativity and political unity as solutions. My name is Marcello Rolando. I am the Reasonable Voice, and my guest today is Police Lieutenant Joe Flamini. Joe, how are you today?
Splendid, splendid. Watching the snow fall down all around me.
I know, it's something, you know, they said no accumulation. Doesn't look like much on the streets, but I have to get from my front door to my car.
About a little bit over 2 inches at my house.
Wow.
It's still coming down.
Wow. Well, Joe, you know, you're a fascinating guy, and I don't have to explain where we are, but I'll tell people this. Joe and I often stand in the middle of the bridge, sometimes facing one another in total agreement, like on points of education and the need for it, and infrastructure, etc., and sometimes back to back, as he shouts at the left to do the right thing and I shout at the right to do the correct thing. But we are a great team because we both believe in the power of listening to different points of view and in education. Well, how's that for an introduction, Joe?
Sounds great.
To both.
I'm not quite as far right as you might think I am, but I'm closer to the middle than you imagine.
Well, no, I believe we're both in the middle. I think you're just right of center and I'm just left of center, and we're trying to get more people to join us. But anyway, let's talk about some of those things. This is your 17th year in law enforcement?
18th, actually.
Yeah, wow.
July will mark the end of 18 years, and I'll be beginning my 19th year this summer.
Wow. And you are in the Central Virginia area, yes?
I am, yes. At the Central Virginia Agency.
Okay. But you were into physics and engineering prior to this? Tell us something about that life.
I was actually educated mostly as a physicist. I spent most of my life as an electrical engineer, as a circuit designer. I was in on cell phone creation from the beginning, and I worked for a German multinational, Siemens, doing a bunch of telecom cryptography things for them before moving down to Virginia in 1980.
Wow. You were in on cell phone creation. You throw that out with such a aplomb and simplicity. Can you elaborate on that? I mean, I can remember when we didn't have cell phones.
Oh, yeah. Well, there were mobile phones, I mean, since before the Second World War, but they were, you know, a trunk load of electronics, and there were very few available only to the rich. Sometime in the early to mid-60s, some guys at Bell Labs and some other guys at Motorola decided that there ought to be a way where every man and every woman can have a mobile communications device.
Uh-huh.
And I was part of a 34-man team back in 1968, I guess it was. I was number 34, by the way, the absolute bottom of the stack. I was the one that came in and cleaned up the lab. I worked my way up from there. We actually did I spent 2 years driving around downtown Chicago with a carload of measuring equipment, taking signal strength readings and that sort. And it was kind of fun to get in on cell phones from the beginning. We never, ever, ever imagined these tiny portable Star Trek-like devices.
Yes.
No one could think of that. We always thought of something in a vehicle. But, you know, progress takes off faster than we can imagine, much less faster than we imagine. So.
Well, that, I'm with you on that. I remember when I got my first answering machine, And I felt like, you know, racing home to get messages, and it just became a routine. And now, of course, with the smartphone, I don't know how, I hate to sound like a, you know, one of these people who can't imagine invention. I certainly can. I just didn't imagine myself becoming a 21st century, full-fledged 21st century citizen. But I really have gotten used to the business that I can take care of between business appointments just by having a cell phone. So thank you, Joe.
Have you noticed, though, as soon as some neat new gadget becomes available, it doesn't take long for it to become compulsory?
Yes. It's addictive, like a lot of things that corporations throw at us, but we won't go there quite yet. Tell me, what... we've had a few examples in the news lately about people breaking into cars in Charlottesville because the cars are unlocked, and one lady who was broken into said she'd rather, her point of view was to leave the car unlocked because they wouldn't break the window, and, you know, some of the law enforcement poo-pooed that point, but then just this past weekend, cars were, I presume, I don't know, locked in various public places, you know, like shopping centers or whatever, and someone came along and broke windows and stole things. So between breaking into vehicles and road rage, is Central Virginia becoming more like other areas in the country, some of which I come from?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, I come from a metro area myself, Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm afraid it is, and it's not so much that it's becoming like it's just Charlottesville. It's just about everywhere. We need to remember that as the economy progressively goes down the toilet, people who are used to having stuff when they can't get stuff are going to take your stuff.
Yes.
And they're going to do it one way or the other. And then people who don't find any stuff out of just simple rage. I mean, there's a lot of them out there. There are good guys and bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
And the bad guys are going to smash things just for the sheer heck of doing it. We need to remember, I mean, that's why teenagers always, that's most of our, most of our crime as it is in my jurisdiction is teenage mischief. The teenager, having been one,
yes.
I know that when you haven't yet produced anything, you need to destroy things because, you know, that testosterone has to go somewhere.
Yes.
And so people not having done anything productive or creative are going to do something destructive, and that goes way up into adulthood. I don't think anything's going to stop that. I lock my car.
Yes. I lock mine as well, and of course, and that comes from living in New York, where I didn't even have a car. But, you know, every time we rented one to go out to the Hamptons or wherever, you just locked it because you were in that Manhattan state of mind. But even when I live in Washington, D.C., and I have a home in Charlottesville as well, but I can't imagine not locking my car. So I wasn't one of the media that poo-pooed the lady who said that was a good idea, but at the same time, I disagree with her. But road rage, I'm going to give you, this wasn't a real example of road rage, but I was driving home from the radio studio just last evening, and not that this is the first time it's happened to me in my life, but this sort of blue, bright blue Honda, made to look like it was akin to a Mustang or something, but it was a Honda or Hyundai, pulls up and all this muffler noise going, whatever, beside me. You know, he's revving the motor. I guess he felt... because looking at me, I don't think he would expect a road runner, but what I drive certainly has some power under the hood. And he was actually challenging me to race down Route 29. And, of course, I wasn't interested in that for a number of reasons.
I'm going to strongly advise against that.
Yes. And so what happened, you know that there's a bit of a dangerous intersection there where Route 29 South peels off in front of, what is that store, Best Buy, and gets on the 250 bypass. That's not the safest exit or then entrance on 250. There have been some incidents there. So the last place, if I was even going to consider racing, I wasn't going to do it there. And he took off. He rode right beside me, and until finally I just backed off and let him proceed so I could get into that same right lane to make that same exit. And then he just took off, and by the time I joined him on 250, he was well gone. Now, I tell that story, I do want to talk about road rage, and I know that's not exactly an example of road rage, but there are people out there who think a car weighing thousands of pounds is some kind of toy, and getting upset when you get in the way of their toy or you try to prove your toy is better than their toy. What do you run into that? And it's not just, is it just teenagers or what?
Oh, no, my goodness. You and I are both of European descent.
That's
all
right.
European men consider their cars toys.
Yes.
probably during my younger years, maybe even some more recent years, you know, we all tend to, we all dream about that sports car on the Autobahn kind of thing.
Yes.
In especially around here, I joke about people around here, they complain about, you know, traffic jam on Route 29.
I know.
10 minutes. Have you ever been up on Long Island Expressway on a Saturday
evening? Exactly. Or even the Washington Beltway.
Washington Beltway, that's exactly right. The longest circular parking lot. But you can't really do that sort of thing around here. And I have always been, in all facets of my life, a stand-your-ground person.
Mm-hmm.
I tend not to yield to anyone, especially on matters of principle, with one exception. When I'm out on the road and somebody wants to challenge the turf or what, I yield completely.
Yes.
It's the one place where I just say, you win, before the fight even starts.
Exactly.
And I'll let Darwinism take it over. Evolution works really well with people like that.
Yes.
And don't ever, you know, I hate to sound like Nancy Reagan, but just say no, sit there, let them do what they want.
Yes.
If they're right behind you, pull over at the earliest opportunity, let them go by. Don't speed up when they're trying to pass you.
Yes.
There's just no need to look for trouble. You can stand your ground in your house. You can stand your ground when you're on the downtown mall. You can stand your ground anywhere you want, but on the road, let them have it.
Yes. I couldn't agree more. You know, as you say, we're both European descent, and we've both lived in Florida. New Yorkers drive crazily, but they seem to know how to do it, and they can't go but so far because of the amount of cars. But in Florida, I thought this was, I think the thing that bothered me the most is that the two extremes, either there were people who couldn't see over the steering wheel, who would just put on a signal and move as though, I mean, answer that for me, Joe. I'm always saying under my breath, but it, to me, when you put on a turn signal, it doesn't mean you have done anything or gained any rights other than you are indicating a desire to do something. But there are those who drive among us who put on a turn signal and think, that's it, the world stops, and just pull right over. I really find that very...
Putting on a turn signal does not give you carte blanche to do whatever you want, for sure. I am thankful to those people that actually put them on.
Yes, I like that.
There's nothing worse than getting up behind somebody. You've got two lanes at an intersection, a left and a right lane, and you come up behind the left fellow. He's got no turn signal, and he pulls out into the middle of the intersection, then turns it on and stops. And you really want to press the detonate button.
Yeah.
You know, on your armaments, you know, and you curse under your breath, and you think, well, you know, I should have known better.
Yeah.
Now, interestingly enough, I never do seem to know better, because I'm always in some other world or when I'm out there driving. But, turn signals are years ago, I remember I wrote a lot of tickets for people for turn signal violations because it somehow violated my sense of politeness.
Mm-hmm.
The simplest way to not get into trouble on the road is to be polite.
Mm-hmm.
And not using a turn signal when you're going to turn. You know, somebody's sitting there waiting for you. You know, you don't want to cross in front of their path. They're coming at you. You're waiting for them. Okay. And then they turn right in front of you and go off to your right, to their left.
Yes.
And you think, darn, you know, I really could be a whole 10 seconds farther down the road if they hadn't have done that.
Yeah.
And in the end, who really cares?
Yeah.
So it really does. Road rage... Let it only be half, their half. Just be polite, and sooner or later, you know, other people will come around to being polite. I find that it comes with age.
Yes. Well, listen, let's go from rage to madness. It's March Madness. Every time I'm in Virginia, lately anyway, everyone, including my wife, everyone's ecstatic, and I'm happy for Virginia's basketball team. And I mean, I am. I mean, they seem... I couldn't explain to you Sweet 16 if it's not about a girlfriend, but they are at Sweet 16, and they are all that anyone's talking about, and everyone's racing to the UVA bookstore or Menser's on the corner to buy paraphernalia that has anything on it about UVA basketball champions. What, you know, I, and again, I am sincerely, I'm a great supporter, you know, I direct video and theater, and many times when I, in my early career working in schools, directing shows and in camps, summer camps, I'd be very supportive of the sports guys because, if for no other reason, they wouldn't be in my shows. So I would show up at their games and sincerely cheer them on because I wanted them to win and I wanted them to be in my shows. But the older I get, as I look back on my years as an educator, I'm still concerned, or more concerned, about the difference in not only pay income between men and women, but the income between certain careers, and sports being one of them. When I look at what guys who play sports earn as opposed to what a classroom teacher earns, and the end result of that, one can lead to physical and brain damage even. The other can lead to a lack of education that is needed for us to survive in the world, let alone our economy. I know that's a long question, but I guess my question to you is, I know education is one of your strongest concerns. Are we losing ground? I mean, and what can we do about it?
We have lost immeasurable amount of ground. There's probably a reason why there's not a whole lot of team sports I'm really interested in, because from the earliest days when I was in high school, back in the late 50s, early 60s, it was always the jocks that got all the privileges. It is so to this day.
Mm-hmm.
Movie stars and sports figures pretty much own the world. They certainly own the country. And I've often said, matter of fact, I've said it just this past week to my wife, the Russians move into Crimea. The Russians could move into Charlottesville and nobody would notice that we're being taken over as long as there was a football or basketball game going on.
Oh, wow.
As long as we're entertained, we don't care. The world is coming apart at the seams. The financial world, educationally, we're down in the toilet when we used to be at the top of the heap during the space race era.
Mm-hmm.
But as long as people get entertained by football or basketball or some action movie or a video game,
mm-hmm.
nobody cares.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to come back to bite us real hard. I don't know how to remedy it. When I was in high school, I was a bit of a geek. You know, I always wanted to read and do scientific things and tinker with my ham radios and all of that other rot. And whereas, guess who got all the girls? It was always the jocks.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to make fun of it even then. I appreciate watching a game from time to time, baseball especially. My dad always used to take me to Phillies games in Philly. And I used to get worked up about it, and then I'd go home and I'd wonder why I got worked up about it. I think I did because my dad did. It was just one of those things. But we have fallen victim to a state of affairs where as long as there's a cold six-pack and a football game on, the world can come to a complete halt. And it's not just the kids. I mean, the parents are that way. Why should they be interested in what the kids are learning? You know, for years when I was growing up, we didn't have television. Of course, television was kind of in its infancy back then, but everybody else had a television, but I had a library card. And, you know, it's done me well in my life. I think one of the other reasons for that is, you know, I did undergrad work at MIT, and they don't have a football team or a basketball team.
Huh. Interesting. You know, I never thought of, I didn't realize that, actually.
Yeah, when was the last time you heard about, you know, the MIT Wizards or whoever, you know, trouncing Army or so? You know, of course not. You know, they're interested in education and research. And by the way, it's except for the actual jocks themselves, it's no accident that the MIT grads and the Drexel grads and the Harvard grads have a tendency to make more money than the guy that majored in football at Podunk U. So I don't know what to do about it, Marcello. I think it's one of those things that is going to have to come back to hit us really hard before we realize what's happening. But in this country especially, entertainment reigns supreme.
Mm-hmm.
And until it doesn't, we're kind of doomed.
Well, let's make clear as we go to a break here that we're pro-education. It's not so much that we're anti.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's not that we're anti-sports or entertainment, but we need some balance. I think that's what Police Lieutenant Joe Flamini and I are saying, and the balance right now is just obliterating our educational system and the product. The product is the future ability of our children to be able to take over and know what they're doing and do a better job than some of us have done. In any case, we're going to take a break now. I'm Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice. My guest today is Police Lieutenant Joe Flamini. We will, we're both in Central Virginia at the moment, and we'll be right back to talk about why a physical engineer would become a police officer. Stay with us. Don't go away. To the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Marcello Rolando, and my guest today is Police Lieutenant Joe Flamini. He is a police lieutenant in Central Virginia, and he has quite a varied background, educational background, and probably fuels his passion about our need to pay more attention to education and educators and those who need education. But I'd like to talk... if we could now, Joe, why did you become a police officer? I mean, we know from the first segment you were educated in physics and you have been an engineer, you were involved in the development of the cell phone, and why did you become a police officer? Something must have happened.
Well, it did. I had a bad encounter with an officer from a local agency, actually, some years ago, 2 decades ago, really.
Mm.
And it profoundly moved me about the way this young man threw his badge, and his badge heavy, as I like to call cops like that, still had that new cop smell, you know?
Gotcha.
liked to throw his badge and his weight around and show me who was boss when hadn't done anything wrong. I had actually just stopped by the side of the road, interestingly enough, to make a cell phone call.
Oh, wow.
On the shoulder, and I had my blinkers on, and that was enough probable cause for him to stop and hassle me. And... It was a really transformative experience. And then I started looking around me, and I'm realizing that this sort of thing has happened to other people.
Mm-hmm.
That somehow we have gone from the truly community-oriented beat cop to a paramilitary force that out there that considers us, the citizenry, the enemy.
Mm-hmm.
And I was determined to do something about it. And... letters to the editor were fine. The local paper publishes one of mine, half dozen times a year. That wasn't enough.
Mm-hmm.
Making noise at the Board of Supervisors meetings wasn't enough. Complaints to agency heads wasn't enough. I said, the way I'm going to do it is I'm going to be the kind of cop I used to respect when I was growing up in Philadelphia, and there I am.
Wow. Wow. Well, things, I know we've got a lot of video to prove your point, that's for certain. With beatings and suspect shootings, and I think, and not that I'm making an excuse for abusive law enforcement, but I do think everyone's under a lot more stress these days, and I think it comes from the economy or the uncertainty of the economy. We don't know, as you alluded to in the last segment, Americans are used to pushing buttons and clicking a switch and turning a stove, and it all is there. You open the refrigerator, it's cold, and you take something out of it that is nourishing, or even if it's junk food. But, it's there. There's such an immediacy in our being satisfied with everything. And now I think
at least since 2008, we have an economic uncertainty that even though things are improving at a snail's pace, to be sure, there's still such uncertainty, and it's sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy. The media's feeding it to us, and we're feeding it to each other. And do you think, how does the economy impact on law enforcement or on any our daily life? And this whole NSA, spying on us.
No, there's no doubt about it. The economy, whenever anybody says it's not about the money, there's one thing you can be absolutely certain of. It's about the money.
Yes.
Whenever you hear that expression, it's not about the money. Just cross out "not" and the rest of the conversation will make sense.
Yes.
But it's not just that. Yes, the economy is terrible. Nobody, absolutely nobody, is ready for the economic storm that's right around the corner. And it's coming very soon.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly within the next couple of years. I think we're going to see, all Vladimir Putin has to do is start selling off his treasuries, and we're going to turn into Zimbabwe or Argentina overnight. Mm. Nobody's ready for that.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's preparing for that. But it's not just that as far as law enforcement. This started long before 2008.
Mm-hmm.
We are the generation now, kids growing up and the generation, they call them Gen Xers and Gen Yers and whatever it is, millennials, I don't even know who is what anymore, but in the last 30 years, the kids have been getting, I call it the indoctrination generation. We're not teaching them anymore, we're indoctrinating them.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime somebody can make a toy gun and point it at somebody in a classroom and go bang and get suspended, we have crossed over a Rubicon of insanity.
Mm-hmm.
That sort of indoctrination, the political correctness of it all, became way more important than actually learning.
Hmm.
I made a joke once in a piece that I wrote about the Thomas Jefferson Center for Free Speech, as long as the free speech doesn't offend anybody.
Yes.
Long title, but that's what it really should be called.
Yes.
And nobody wants to go out of their way to offend anybody, but how about the kids out in California can't wear the American flag on their T-shirts?
Yeah.
Because it might offend Mexicans on Cinco de Mayo? What? I keep saying, as soon as the parts to my saucer come in, I'm going back to my home planet because all of you Earthlings are just completely crazy. We have come down to that, to where educating kids, can you solve a trigonometric equation? Do you know what happened in 1066 A.D.? Can you put the apostrophe and the word "it's" in the right place consistently? We don't teach people that anymore. We teach them how to push buttons, get instant gratification, and be politically correct and not offend anybody. The rest of the world, in Asia, the Japanese are very, very polite. I've spent time in Tokyo and Osaka and Hokkaido in my business travels. They're insanely polite, but when it comes down to education, they don't care who they offend.
Mm-hmm.
They'll whoop your butt in any kind of tournament that involves actual learning. To the point of actually to a fault sometimes, where it becomes obsessive. But we used to have a nice balance. You and I are close to the same age, and we remember what it was like in the 50s and 60s when the country united to put a man on the moon, and every kid my age was sketching rockets and designing better boosters and making primitive telemetry apparatus out of tin cans. Everybody was doing it. Nobody does that anymore. And somehow we have lost the spark, and it's not the kids' fault, and it's not the teachers' fault.
Mm-hmm.
It's the people who manipulate the teachers, the politicians, the school board chiefs, the people who are trying so hard not to offend anybody, especially a minority anybody, that we just don't produce anything anymore. And it's terrifying to watch from my perch, because I've been there and gone, and kind of too old to do anything about it anymore other than grouse about it.
Mm.
So we leave it to our children and hope for the best.
So, is it a shift in? I hear you. I tell people don't trust either major political party. They both have a 1% agenda. But how do we, I mean, because this sounds like a mindset. It sounds like, as I've written many times, we've been sort of numbed into the herd mentality. But there's got to be a way, I mean, it's important to point it out, to recognize it, to point it out, to educate people about it, excuse me, but what's the next step? And the easy answer are giving teachers, I think, better teachers an easier time and more money to do a better job rather than trying to impose things on the classroom that are not, don't belong in the classroom. But I
more money and a better time for them is certainly a good thing, but that's not going to do it. If nothing else, just giving them the authority to discipline kids, if I were king of the world and could press my button and have anything, kids would come to school dressed pretty much the same, like I did. I mean, boys would wear slacks with a shirt and tie. The girls would wear something modest. There wouldn't be any pierced anything. There wouldn't be any exposed tattoos. The thought of, piercing eyebrows and tats and when I was in school would have been, there were only certain classes of women did that when we were growing up. The discipline is certainly one thing. I don't know that the powers that be are going to let us do that, because God knows it would offend somebody and we can't offend anybody. I fear we have reached, this is a bit pessimistic of me, but I fear we have reached a point where a process will no longer do it. It's going to take an event. Something bad. People are not going to be willing to climb out of their stupor until they're hungry, until they realize they're not going to eat and they're not going to stay warm and they're not going to be clothed unless they do something sensible. And as long as, just like you said, we're used to the push button, everything. You open the fridge, take out a cold beer. It's always there.
Yes, yeah.
Until we hurt a little bit, the people in general are not going to wake up. They're anesthetized by the mainstream media. They're anesthetized by their football games and basketball games. They're anesthetized by fast food and government programs. And if all of that stops and people get hungry during an event, and I'm not saying it has to be a cataclysmic event. It doesn't have to be a pandemic or a nuclear Armageddon or any of that. But I think it's going to be a financial event. I think something's going to happen. I mean, we're in the midst of it. We've been in a financial collapse for over a decade now. The question is, how much longer are we going to put up with it?
Well,
when we decide not to put up with it, you're going to see education and a whole lot of other things take on a whole different focus.
That's an interesting statement, quite provocative. I wonder, even as we see, as I've said for quite a while, what do you think is going to happen? What's going to be cut first when all this sequester stuff is happening and or is happening? If there's less money from the federal government and less money, therefore, from the state government, because the federal government isn't giving money to the state government, so they have less money to give to counties and cities, et cetera, and it, it's a spiral. It's you throw the rock in the economic pond, and then you watch the ripples effect. But what happens if, I mean, we're seeing it, of course, Albemarle County supervisors, the chair was on the show not terribly long ago, talking about the budget and the fact that the school system is needing more and more money, and there's less and less money to give. So I think we're already seeing maybe not a major single event, but it's like the frog in the simmering pot of water. It's slowly but surely there is an undoing of what we have always taken for granted. And if that foundation, like the recent mudslide, it's there 1 minute, but then finally it's just too much and everything gives way, I fear more than... I fear what's going to happen in the streets. I think when people are used to life and a certain standard, When they think of themselves, when they say Americans, there's a good deal of comfort that goes along with that, and then that comfort is diminished. I mean, it has been diminished, let's face it. But when people don't see or lose their hope, I'm concerned about what's going to happen in the streets. I've been concerned, frankly. I can't imagine how banking institutions, after everything that happened in 2008, 2009, haven't been concerned about people taking to the streets and running on the banks or whatever, and I'm not certain that that possibility is still out of the realm of possibility.
Not at all. It's quite within the realm of possibility. The first time the banks shut down and you go to your ATM and you can't draw any cash out.
Yes.
Your debit card doesn't work. You're going to see blood in the streets a lot quicker than anybody would have thought.
Yes.
The problem is that the people who vote for a living now outnumber the people who produce for a living. And there's an awful lot of freebies out there. And the government can't give out freebies, but for so long when the people who produce stop paying.
Exactly.
And that trigger point is dangerously, dangerously close. I mean, witness Greece. I've been to Athens, and one of the things that impressed me, just a wonderful place to be. And one of the things I remember about it was that impressed me is everybody I talked to, everybody worked for the government. It occurred to me that the joke there was that, you know, everybody in Athens works for the motor vehicle department. And somebody sells olive oil and ouzo. But the money has to come from somewhere.
Yes.
Productions, people actually have to produce, and the people that produce are getting tired of not getting rewarded for it when the people that don't produce are getting rewarded, and that is a dangerous paradigm. That is a triggerable event just waiting to happen, and that's what I fear most.
And when you say, well, who do you mean when you say the people who produce and not being, who are they? Is that the
well,
one?
The people who design things, the people
gotcha.
Who manufacture things, the people who service things.
Yes.
I service a populace. I used to design and service machines.
Uh-huh.
Now I try to walk into a chaotic situation and create order. So I produce order. The guy selling hamburgers at McDonald's is producing a service. He's offering you food that you don't have to go in the back in the kitchen and cook for yourself.
Uh-huh.
They produce.
Gotcha.
But the people who do not produce, who just sit and consume,
yes.
That equation can only go on for so long. I mean, look what happened in Cyprus. You know, the government just decided, we're taking 10% of your savings and you can only have $200 a day or something like that. And everybody went, wait, what?
Yeah.
But since the government takes care of most of them most of the time anyway. Dmitry Orlov is a great author, and he talked about the five stages of collapse because he was living in the Soviet Union when it collapsed and came to America. And he said the people in the Soviet Union almost didn't notice there was a collapse because they had been so used to the government taking care of them anyway.
Wow.
There wasn't any capitalism to speak of, so when they segued over to capitalism, there were some adjustments, but there was always heat in the buildings.
Yeah.
And nobody had to pay rent because nobody ever paid rent. It's not going to be quite so easy for us. When we collapse, it's going to come crashing down a lot harder. Like you say, J.P. Morgan says you can't have your money, and you can't watch your football game. Here we are.
Wow. Okay. I don't know how we're going to lighten up this, but I know how we can fire it up. Tell us, since I know your position, there's a great deal of controversy and conflict in the nation on a number of things, many of which we've discussed today, but certainly high on the list is guns. And I'd like you to share with us as... Well, not necessarily as a police lieutenant, but as Joe, how do you feel about this? The gun lobby that's for it, and the anti-gun movement. Who should have guns?
Well,
who shouldn't?
I'm of the opinion that everybody should have guns, unless you're a criminal or crazy. But the hype over guns is a fairly recent thing.
Mm-hmm.
When I was growing up, I mean, it was no big deal that people had guns. They had shotguns in the back of their pickup trucks. You know, there wasn't the lunacy that there is now. The hyperbole over firearms is misplaced.
Mm-hmm.
The gun itself is no different than any other weapon. You can use it for offense. You can use it for defense. The Virginia Cavaliers have as part of their symbol two crossed sabers.
Mm-hmm.
And sabers, by the way, were designed for only one thing, to kill other human beings.
Yes, true.
That's what they are.
Yeah.
They're weapons. You take all the guns away. They did that in Australia. There was a school shooting in Australia. They rounded up all the guns. And now women are routinely abducted and raped at knife point. And unless you're a really good knife fighter or super strong, you're pretty much going to get abducted and raped.
Hmm.
A gun is simply a means for a reasonable person to protect themselves from a bad, unreasonable person.
Mm-hmm.
The whole concept of gun violence, the phrase itself I find remarkable. I mean, nobody ever talks about knife violence or club violence or brick violence or Molotov cocktail violence. They talk about gun violence. And the reason they do, and what has polarized so many people, is because it's convenient. It's a way of lobbing a brick or a bat, if you will, at a great distance. You don't actually have to get close to your adversary. That's what makes it so great as a defensive tool. Some big two bruisers want to come and take me apart. I'm not going to let them get close enough to argue with them.
Yeah.
But there's always going to be that tiny, tiny, tiny minority that's going to say, "Ooh, boy, I can do some really great havoc with this." And because of a few lunatics out there that want to shoot up schools or military bases or, interestingly enough, all the places where ordinary people aren't allowed to carry defensive weapons, this is no accident. Because of that, there's this stigma here. I find that the Hollywood producer, can't even think of his name now, you know, he's made his fortune making hundreds of shoot-'em-up movies where there's gore and mayhem and whatever, and he's now leading a putting a movie together with Meryl Streep, I think it is, to try and take down the NRA. You know, the NRA started out as a hunting organization and a Second Amendment rights organization. I mean, it's not the gun itself is not evil. If you don't want to carry a gun and you want to walk the downtown mall at night and take your chances, by all means do so. No one is forcing anybody to carry a gun.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to carry a gun or keep one in your home or on your person or in your glove compartment or wherever else you want to keep one, I don't see why, and Thomas Jefferson didn't either, and he said early on, "No free man shall be debarred the use of arms." That's what keeps us free. So it doesn't take but a couple of rotten apples to spoil the barrel for anybody, and that's why all this controversy rages on. You know, the Hollywood moguls and the movie stars and this sort of thing never happened 30 years ago. So something happened in between, but I don't know why these people don't want me to protect myself when I'm out having dinner with my wife. I just don't get it.
Hmm. Well, unfortunately, we're out of time, but it has been, as usual when I talk with Joe, a provocative conversation, many great points made. I hope you will ponder, listen to the podcast over and over, and, you know, give us a call sometime. This is Marcello Rolando. I'm the Reasonable Voice. And today my guest has been Police Lieutenant Joe Flamini of Central Virginia. And don't go away. We're going to say goodbye to Joe. Why should you care what I believe and why I believe it? Recently, as a media news producer, I reported on a brief loss of water in a small Central Virginia town. One morning, the faucet simply didn't deliver what was expected and taken for granted. While a resident laughed it off on camera with, "If that's all we have to worry about, ha ha ha." Why should we care when most miss the trees for the forest? And with little grasp of what exactly is infrastructure, don't recognize it's failing us. Is this our ignored water in the face wake-up call reminding us its last call for our failing it, the infrastructure? Why should you care for experiencing information through a broader lens or about man's inhumanity to women and children? Why care when earth, water, and air fire warning shots of rape and neglect? Why care to attend the beyond 140 characters? Why care for the loss of the quiet needed in search for inner peace? Why care to raise your gaze and awareness from mind-numbing repetitious devices to the wilderness of the sky and the freedom to imagine without input from zombies? To care, we need look no further than the spot where now we stand, physically, spiritually, and politically. For the battle demanding our increased attention span is in the reflection of our denied extension of ourselves. Carelessly devouring our common foundation, we cause the very thing we pretend to ignore. Carefully now, for inhaling and exhaling the swirling winds, gusting change all around us, might bear the fruit of purging chosen ignorance, cleansing the debris of misinformation, and purifying an open mind by replacing complacency and apathy with aware, imaginative, solution-oriented action. Why care for unity when we're now so accustomed to the muckety-mucks keeping us off balance with their fantasy marketing and climate fairy tales of polar bear cubs dying in ice melted by the hot air of grizzly bear moms? Why should we care about GM ignitions, pools of mid-Atlantic coal ash, Medicare for all, or Bill Maher's new rules? Why care about Democrats who ran from Obamacare until millions of us got the Affordable Care Act up and running just by showing up to sign up? Why care when men whose hallowed-out core blinds them to the necessity of equal economic opportunity, who lack empathy for constitutional equality for women and fail citizens most in need of food, employment, and voting rights protection? Why care when such men deny affordable health care to those who elected them? Wisdom comes to those who glean the future by perceiving the connection between ourselves to our national pastimes of secrets and lies and successes and defeats to current international scenarios, largely played out off news screens, large or small, just beyond plugged ears, blurred eyes, and sleep-deprived minds. Why should we care about those some in the past have called the Untermensch? Because to some people, 99% of us, conservatives and liberals, are those people. Now, care to trust the silence once a day, and listen enough to care.
Thank you for continuing to listen, support, and share The Reasonable Voice with your friends. We are now accepting offers for your company or organization to advertise with us, and welcome new sponsors for The Reasonable Voice. To apply, please email us at thereasonablevoice@gmail.com.
Thank you for joining us today and every day and recommending us to all your friends, both online and offline. And please download our downloadable podcasts. I am Marcello Rolando, The Reasonable Voice, hoping you will become one of the reasonable voices heard round the world.